Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hi there, it's Julia Louis-Dreyfus. You may know me from my podcast called Wiser Than Me, where I talk to older women and get their wisdom from the front lines of life. I was amazed by how many people told me our show made them look forward to getting older, which is why I'm here to talk about season 2 of the show. Sally Field, Billie Jean King, Beverly Johnson, Ina Garten, Bonnie Raitt, just to name a few. All hail old women. Wiser Than Me season 2 is out now from Lemonada Media.
Yeah. Happy hour. Okay, I'm gonna try to. Oh my God, Marcia Warfield is here in my house.
In your basement.
Okay. I know you know her from Night Court and
whatever.
Fuck, you know her from.
Say by the bell.
I know her from being my comedy idol, my icon. I'm in my 50s. You're in your 60s. But you were the shit, and you still are.
Well, it's nice to know. I've always wanted to be the shit.
Should I say shizzle? You think I swear too much on the happy hour.
You know, I'm just...
Marcia Warfield,
we had some controversy with Samantha Bee this week. I'm trying to keep us on the air.
Oh, we have so much to talk about. I don't know where to start. Because you are one of my comedy heroes. I don't know if you know that. Probably not. But for a lot of women, a whole generation of us, you were... A trailblazer, you were ferocious, you were all of this shit that's happening, Me Too, all of it, the racism, these conversations we're having around Roseanne, the dirty words from Samantha Bee, you were a trailblazer for all of that.
Well, it's a good thing I didn't know that then.
You were just funny, man.
I was just, making it up as I went along. I'm doing what I thought it was supposed to be done.
Yeah. Well, we're obviously taping this on a week when we find out that 70 times the amount of people died in Puerto Rico that we thought died. We found out that the president is obstructing justice on a daily basis more than we ever thought.
Ripping families apart at the border.
Right. Tearing infants away from their parents at the border who are not even illegal, who are here asking for asylum. And Samantha Bee said the C word.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's the happy hour. I said cunt.
Yes.
And, I mean, when did we become the comedians are the problem in America?
I saw that coming with Trump being elected. I said, there's no more comedy. You can't be funnier than the situation. The situation is so ridiculous that, just saying it is the joke.
Right. But funny in a way, but also horrifying and not funny.
Well, it's horrifying.
And terrifying and sad, yeah. Right? Like, isn't it like they keep saying comedians are leading the resistance, and yet we're all like, this is not fucking funny.
When
this
I talk about it on stage, I ask, do we have any Trump supporters? And nobody ever says anything. As if it's the first president in history nobody voted for.
You're just performing in the right places, apparently.
No, I'm in Vegas. Everybody shows up in Vegas.
Yeah, you live in Vegas now.
Yeah.
So that's right. Everybody shows up in Vegas. So that's interesting. What would you say, what percentage of your act is political or anti-Trump and what is not? And
all comedy is political and all my comedy is anti-Trump. I mean, I'm a walking anti-Trump.
You're a black gay woman.
There's just no way that I would be pro-Trump.
You're just like anti-MAGA.
Yeah.
Not MAGA.
When was America great? I'm scared to find out where they want to go back to.
What do they define as great?
Yeah, you know, I keep going back into history and go, no, that wasn't, no.
Yes,
that wasn't,
no.
No, that was pretty sucky, too.
That fucking sucked, too. Okay, I don't, where do we want to start about this week? Because, so, Samantha Bee makes a great point about us ripping infants away from their parents.
Right.
She uses, whatever, maybe she could have used a different word. You know, we just had Kathy Griffin on the Happy Hour, you know, 3 weeks ago. So she had a Halloween mask with ketchup. Is this the same as the President of the United States saying, grab him by the pussy and calling Sally Yates a cunt and mocking a disabled, like on and on, yeah. Right?
No, it's not the same. And it's whataboutism. You know, that we've become...
That's right.
We've become more... The opinion is more important than the fact. So whatever it is, it doesn't matter what the fact is. It's how you feel about it. And so we've all broken into these little camps and debate how we feel about things when it has nothing to do with what the real truth is. And so we're just arguing about air.
I love that.
No, it's really... I'm on social media. I love social media. Facebook. I'm retired. I was retired for a long time, and that's what old people do, Facebook. And Facebook is the 21st century version of sitting in the window yelling at people. So that's what I do, you know. And
I love that you post every story and then you just yell at it, which is fantastic.
I argue with people about it because people say stupid things and we let it pass.
Yeah.
You know, everybody lets it pass, but I don't. I ask them, why did you say that? Why is this? What the hell are you talking about?
So can you explain to people why Samantha Bee calling another woman the C word, as whatever you think of that word,
you can say
is different. Cunt, right.
A feckless cunt.
Thank you. Feckless cunt. She's not.
Well,
she's more feckless than cunt, in my opinion. But anyway, my point is, Marcia, that can you explain how that's different than calling a black woman an ape? Like, please stop on fucking social media with going, that wasn't racist, she looks like a... It's like, really, we're not having this conversation anymore, are we?
Yeah, we are.
You know it's a racial insult, or you wouldn't have used it.
Right. Just like we know the reason why you call somebody a cunt is because they're doing something so outrageous, so terrible, that there's nothing else to call them. Whereas you're talking about Valerie Jarrett, she hadn't done anything to anybody that deserves.
Right. Everyone's like, how is she in the news? How the...
Yeah, I mean...
How do you get just called an ape?
Valerie who?
Randomly, what?
Yeah, that's the other thing. Like, how did they go after her? Where did...
So, right.
And it's not the first time.
No.
You know, this
Susan
is a
Rice.
Pretty regular thing.
Yeah. You know, what's your take on Roseanne? You must know her.
I've only met Roseanne once. That was like in 1978, 79. I don't really know her. I follow her on social media. I follow her tweets. And
tweets, she meant insanity. Yes.
I don't really try to follow a lot of comedians. I mean, I follow them, but I don't pay a lot of attention to them because I don't want to sound like them. So I don't really watch other comedians. I'm kind of George Miller. If you remember George Miller,
I
used to have a great line. He said, I'm not going to mention any of the comedians coming up because I'm kind of wrapped up in my own career. And so I just, you know, I wish everybody well, but, you know, they have to own their own bullshit.
Hold that thought, Night Court. It's time for some more Cameron Hughes wine. Stephanie Miller's Happy Hour podcast, yes, brought to you by Cameron Hughes Wine. Travis, are you concerned the degree to which I'm enthusiastic about this company?
You've become like a pusher for it, because like Marcia was not going to have any wine, but you said, but it's Cameron Hughes wine.
Right.
And then you explained to her.
Right. Oh, no, you should hear my private conversations with my friends. I'm a walking infomercial, mm-hmm. because I never believed in anything like this. I didn't know such a thing existed. I was actually thinking about it. I'm tired of driving and parking and hauling cases. Sean, do I buy that much at a time?
Yeah.
Anyway, Cameron Hughes wine, let me explain what it is. It is wine sourced from boutique and artisanal wineries from around the world, unbeatable quality and price. It is award-winning wines, and I'm telling you, half the price. Well,
they've been doing this for 17 right. years. We've wasted 17 years of our lives.
Thank you. That's what I want to do over.
Think about all the driving to the store we could have saved, Thank all the you. Gas we could have saved for the last 17 years.
Thank you. It's nobody delivers high-end boutique artisanal wines better than chwine.com. You've got to go check it out. It is. I thought it was a winery at first, and when I saw the wine, I'm like, there's no way wine at this price is going to be. You know me, I love my Chardonnays.
Yes.
They've got $13, $14, $15, $16 bottles. I'm like, there's no way. I'm telling you, you can tell those are probably $30 or $40 bottles.
I have a friend who went to sommelier school.
Right.
I was telling her about this last weekend at the cabin. Yeah. And she was like, I need to see this website. I need to look at And she was fascinated when
Cameron
she went through
Hughes
and read it
all. Is a guy. Yeah. He's your sommelier. He's been doing this for over 17 years. It is one of the most successful online wine retailers. There's just a lot number on each one. And they give you great descriptions so that you know exactly what kind of wine it is. If you know, like, oh, I like a buttery Rumbauer type, you know.
You can go there and search for what you're looking
right,
for, and they
exactly,
have it.
Exactly. I am a Pinot Noir and a Chardonnay girl, as you know. They mm-hmm. also have a great sparkling wine. They have a great rosé. I'm not a big red girl, but they have amazing cabs, from what I'm told. I'm going to try the red blend, because that's supposed to be amazing. Great wine, direct to you, finest wines, direct to your door. Cam stands behind every bottle of wine, guarantees you every one of them. Cameron Hughes Wine, exceptional value, extraordinary wine. Go to chwine.com, use the code Miller, you get 15% off and free shipping.
That's what you want, free shipping, so you don't have to drive to the store.
That's the other reason I wasn't doing it online. I'm like, oh, I got to pay for shipping. No, just use the code Miller. Go to chwine.com, use the code Miller. You get 15% off and free shipping with your minimum 3-bottle order today. chwine.com. The code is Miller. And now back to the show. Right, but, I mean, Marcia, in the week that, you know, Samantha Bee saying Kant is the worst thing that's ever happened, we find out the death toll in, you know, Puerto Rico is 70 times, whatever. We find out he's committing treason again out in the open. We find out, you know, I mean, on and on and on. And that he's, I mean, how many T-shirts did you say at Trump rallies Hillary's a cunt? Like, you're like, I mean, he's called Sally Yates a cunt. Like, you're just like, he's lowered
Leading
the bar
from
so
whatever,
far.
From wherever.
But yes. Where?
From wherever.
I know comedians saying dirty words is a shock to you, but...
yeah.
But really? He's lowered the bar so far that you're like, how do you go, oh, this is... I mean, it's selective outrage.
But we've known these things. We knew that people were dying in Puerto Rico when he was tossing
paper towels
at people. Yeah. That's what made it, well, it was outrageous.
How many casualties did he cause with head injuries? Who knows?
Yeah, but we knew that then. Yeah. So yeah. It's like we know the truth and we report it. And then he goes, yeah, but what about peanut butter? You know, and then everybody goes, yeah, what about peanut
right.
butter? And but I don't even like
Who?
Peanut butter.
Right? Who? What?
And we get all caught up in that. And
peanut
the people
are
still dead, you know, and we fall for the bait.
Here's the weird thing, too. So we're taping this on June 1st. This is Pride Month starting. Travis, what did I say to you? I was like, oh, I didn't know Marshall Warfel was gay. Like, I didn't, honestly, because I just loved you as a comedian, and I didn't realize you didn't come out till last year. And I know people are like, "What? A female comedian is what?"
Really? Yep. Shock, surprise.
But I did not. I didn't actually know.
Well, I didn't know.
I felt like you were out before that, though.
No, I was out. You know, people come out in stages.
Yeah.
Yeah. No.
You
yeah.
know, and so
what
I
year
was,
did I? Did we Google what year I came out?
August 13th, 2010.
Thank you.
I came out in to family and friends and. That whole thing and
me
and,
too
but I didn't know I was gay until I was in my 20s.
Yeah. No, me neither. I
nobody
guess, yeah.
talked about that stuff. I was born I like to say on stage I'm the same age as Oprah Winfrey. We were born in the year of Brown versus the Board of Education, so nobody talked about those things.
Yeah.
They just called you different.
Yeah.
And yeah. I was different, which means they knew. And they could have saved me a lot of trouble if they had just told me, but they didn't.
Right, but they didn't. Yeah. Wow. We actually have a lot in common in that sense that, you know, even though I know you talk a lot about how different it is in the black culture, and I know it is, but I the same thing. I thought, oh, I don't want to do this to my mom. Not your mom specifically asked you don't do this to, while I'm still alive. My mom didn't know, and I just thought, oh, I don't want to put her through this while she's still alive. And my mom is now 95 and still with us.
Yeah, you'd have been waiting.
Yeah. But
no, mom, you know, she's just a friend.
But you're right. I got tired at a certain age of, you know,
having
editing pronouns and where I am for a holiday. And right. Yeah, but so what? Tell us about yours, because you talk about that. That caused some deep pain that she said, wait until I'm gone. And so that obviously imparted shame to you in some way.
Yeah, but at the time, given the climate, you know, this was before Don't Ask, Don't Tell. This was before it was any kind of way okay. So given the climate, it wasn't all that unreasonable a request. It wasn't until later, you know, when you realized that, oh, that was really a lot to, you know, insult to add to the injury. But at the time, it was like, okay, you know, no big deal. I'm just...
Yeah.
But that was the case even well into the 90s. I came out in 1996 to my mom. I was 21. And her first reaction was, who knows?
Right.
Does any of the family know? And I remember, like, the way I had to tell my cousin was, my dad was dying of cancer. And she's like, aren't you sad that your dad's not going to see you get married? I'm like, Renee, I'm gay.
I can't.
He might see me get married, depending on how the Supreme Court goes. Yeah. But, yeah.
That was 2006. Yeah. That was pretty...
I don't know. My mom was like... I mean, I spent so long... Marsha, your experience probably is different, but, you know, judging how they were going to... You know, worrying about how they were going to judge me that I judged them. I'm like, oh, they're Republican, they're Catholic, they're going to... And my mom, I was crying, and my mom burst into tears, too. She's like, oh, Steffi. You know? And then she was just like, oh, you're so pretty. Aren't you attracted to men?
Oh, I got that all the time. It's like, don't you want to look nice? You know, don't you want to look nice? Take off the jeans. Put on a dress. It was a stocking.
Oh, my mom. Like, oh, why can't you? Why do you work so blue? Thing. Why can't you be more like that Rita Rudner? She wears a dress and she doesn't
swear. You want to fix your hair.
Did you ever get, was a phase? Did they ever say it was a phase?
No, because they knew. They knew. I mean, it's like they tried to deprogram me. It's like I talk about, there used to be a thing about left-handedness.
Yeah.
And you didn't want to raise a left-handed child. And so you would hold their arms down and make them use their right hand. And they did the same thing to gay kids. Yeah. They were like,
that was the early reparative therapy.
You saw your child was gay before they knew what sex was. And you tried to put them into a box they didn't fit in. And it was a whole programming thing that they did because they thought that was good parenting.
Well, I gotta say, I saw you in a sketch. Was it the Richard Pryor show? You have such an amazing history. But there was a food foreplay sketch where you and Richard Pryor are eating at a fancy restaurant at different tables.
Right.
And you just start eating food increasingly more seductively.
That was the first sketch.
Google it, you guys, seriously.
I did. That was the first sketch of the night. We taped, the sketches. That was the first sketch. The curtains came up on the show, and we're sitting there. We had not rehearsed it. He got married that day, didn't tell anybody, showed up late. We just said, well, we're just going to do this. I had never done anything like that before. I was scared to death. I had no clue. I worried my mother. I was like, Mom, how do I do this? And she said, oh, you'll be fine. And it just worked. We did one take.
And oh, my God, really? Pickup. It was, okay, by the time you got to the corn on the cob,
that's
just
what
fucking epic, man.
Because I buttered the corn.
Well, that'd be helpful, I would think.
Yeah, I buttered the corn. You know, I they had butter in a dish, and I took it with my fingers, buttered the corn.
And I love him just staring at you, just like sucking in spaghetti, just like...
He said after that he had been blessed with the longest strand of spaghetti in history. And, so.
And by the way, I hope, you know, we're post me too, because nice tits in that sketch. Marsha!
Now they're...
No, it's neither. Still
they
nice.
They look at my shoes.
No, they're fantastic.
Dude, then they talk to him. You know, we're sorry, Marsha. We can't stand up anymore.
They're just winking at your shoes.
We can't do it anymore.
Those are nice shoes, though. They are.
Yeah. Wait, so anyway, I have so much to talk to you about. Bill Cosby, Richard Pryor. But Richard Pryor, let's focus on that for a second, because you obviously, like... That's a lot to be. You worked with this comedy legend, you know. I mean, just that sketch alone. If people Google it,
right.
You were his comedy equal. I mean, you guys were going toe-to-toe, man. I mean,
I was a rookie. It was, I got to town in 1976. I started comedy in 1974. The show was in 1977. And so I had done a couple of little things, but I had not done anything on that scale.
I was awestruck by you.
I was awestruck by Richard. I mean, I just to be in
this
orbit was enough for me. And so to actually be able to work with him was like, you know, trying to entertain God. You just, how do you do that?
What was he like?
He was rather shy.
Was he?
Yeah. He was very quiet and shy until it was time to go on stage. And he was always polite, except when he scratched my palm. And I had no idea what that meant. I was 23 years old. I had no idea what that meant. I had to ask a friend. He scratched my palm and they had to explain it to me.
Oh, that was like supposed to be... Right when a guy shook your hand, I remember this.
Yeah.
No, this is our era. A guy shook your hand and then he went like that. It was like a
give me some. Yeah,
I remember that.
Gay guys still do that.
I know, but I haven't heard that in years. Wait a minute. So, let's talk about Bill Cosby because this is speaking of comedy icons. You've talked about being ashamed of not sharing sooner about Bill Cosby. You talk about being conflicted over him, not only because you looked up to him, as a lot of young comedians did, of course, but because you had first-hand knowledge of his predilection for spiking drinks. So talk about that. Your first PR guy was his first PR guy, and what happened?
Well, I don't know if it was his first PR guy. It was I was like one of the people on the roster, and they told me Cosby wanted a meeting, which was cool because he had done my talk show.
Yeah.
And
wait, when was the Marshall Warfield show?
I don't know.
Was it a late night show?
No, it was a daytime.
Oh, okay. While because my late night show blew up in 95. But you're
no, I was in the era of everybody gets a talk show.
Everybody, and you
Oprah
get a talk show, and
you get a talk show, right?
No, I got one, too. I got one, too. Okay, all right, go ahead.
I had mine, but mine was a minute.
Yeah, I remember.
About as long as the magic hour. And but I had a daytime talk show, and I just wanted to have fun, and that was a foreign concept for daytime. They wanted, you know, cooking.
Can I just say, I don't know why I have a random thought about Arsenio Tell, because Arsenio was very sweet to me, because I got my late night show on his old stage with all his own staff, and they just hoped people wouldn't notice it was a little white lady instead of him. That was what Disney was hoping. But anyway, I remember I probably shouldn't say this, but he was talking about the Kenan show, because of all the shows, Magic, and then Kenan got a show, and he goes, the thing everybody said about A Living Color is like, the only bad part is when the guy gets talks in the beginning. And they gave that guy a show. All right. Anyway, so Magic, fantastic. But anyway, go ahead.
Go ahead and what?
The guy's
what,
a basketball player. Okay. So wait, but so you were talking about Bill Cosby. Wait, you had the same
PR guy.
Yeah.
And they said he wants to meet you. And then he said, and then he throws in, just don't drink anything. I'm like, what? No, you're not his type. But even if he offers you something, you know, don't drink. He likes to, you know, give women drinks, and that way they'll never come back on him.
That's, I mean, I got to say, this is pretty eerie, what you were quoted as saying. He went on to say, Cosby did to protect himself and his image because a drugged woman wouldn't remember, and if she did, no one would believe her. Holy shit.
I couldn't believe what I was hearing, and I'm like, you should never tell anyone this, ever. Don't ever say that again. That's horrible. And he's like, ha, ha, ha. And I'm like, no, ha, ha, hell. That's a horrible thing. And I kind of just filed it away because it's information, first of all, it's secondhand, third hand, and it's something I can't do anything about, but... Right. I don't want to know this. You know, I don't want... Why did you tell me this? You know, it wasn't...
I love this part. He reassured me he's been doing it for years. Everyone knew it. And again, it was no big deal. And so you took the meeting with Cosby, declined drinks. Good girl.
Yeah. I tend to do that most often.
Well, listen, I feel happy that I got you to have a little Chardonnay.
You had to twist your arm to get that.
I'm feeling kind of woozy now. No, I'm just...
I think she went for it because he gave her the Trump drinking glass.
I know. I'm not going to do anything to you.
I'm going to scratch it out and write, no, Trump.
But so, what happened with your meeting with Cosby? So, he offered a
nothing.
Drink.
I couldn't understand why I had this meeting. It was pretty pointless. It was just, you know, random talking and stuff we had already talked about on the air. And then he said, well, okay, and I left. And that was that.
All right, if you're not going to let me put a pill in the people, I'm just going to let you go.
So
that's my Cosby impression.
I didn't pay any attention.
I hope
attention.
You enjoyed it.
I did. I was right back in that office.
I thought that was Fred Sanford.
You know, it's close enough. Okay, so you said you were quoted saying, I'm ashamed I didn't speak out. I'm ashamed my desire to protect another black person from unfair persecution in society that's all too often happy to persecute and kill them without consideration of innocence or guilt was misguided, misplaced, and misapplied. This little bit of gossip weighed so heavily on my heart and conscience. I think that's so well said. When we look at, like I say, you look at this whole NFL player thing, you're like, how many videos have we seen how many have you seen just this week of black people being unfairly targeted, punched, shot?
He just got out of jail because the DNA proved that he didn't do it. He's been in there 27 years, 12 years, right. 40 years, whatever. The Emmett Till.
Yep.
Reality, I went to the National Museum of African American History and Culture, and they have a big Emmett Till exhibit. And those things weigh on your mind, you know? It's like we don't want to unfairly accuse someone, but then there's this rumor that you know about, but I don't have any other corroboration. I don't know what to do with it. You know, and I don't want to be the one who says, yeah, but there's this rumor.
Yeah, you know? No, you're right. You're right. And you talked about this with Morgan Freeman. You said all victims of sexual assault and harassment deserve to be heard, Freeman said, and we need to listen to them, but it's not right to equate horrific incidents. I've said the same thing with my friend Al Franken, that I don't know the whole reality, Marcia, because you're right. Like, you and I are... But I know him. He's kind of a choir boy. Like, I think he took a goofy, stupid picture, and he took it. It's not the same thing as Donald Trump being accused of a sexual assault by 19 women.
That sexual assault, rape, and harassment are different things. Right. So that what might rise to the level of harassment... No, it's not rape. Right. And no, it shouldn't be equated with rape. But it is harassment, you know, the pubic hair on my Coke can.
Hello.
You know, that's about all you need. And so maybe, you know, grabbing somebody's
pussy.
Boob while they're asleep.
Oh, I'm sorry, yes. No, exactly. I mean, but the other thing is we're both comedians. I don't know if you've done USO tours, but I'm going, he was like, well, look, I'm grabbing her tits. Like,
yeah, but if I grabbed your tits as a joke, I meant to grab your tits.
Well, and I would want it. Can I just say? Let me just go on record as saying I would want it, Travis.
Yeah, well,
so basically,
she's Marcia Warfield, comedy legend, who I worship.
Informed consent. How many glasses have you had? Just like
just a couple. And
okay.
Also, I didn't know until today.
But
she
I
was
didn't.
She was
them.
Gay, and so wow. And you're in town to pay tribute to. Sorry, I can't turn off my box.
My favorite song. Have you heard Al Green's version? Al Green's version is just the bomb.
What? Find it. Find it for Marcia and I. Al Green's version of what? Romeo and Juliet?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's do it. That's good. We're going to close to that. And there could be some, overclosed touching.
If you find
there could
it,
be
let
some,
me know.
Yeah, we're going to. Yeah, there could be some shit that happens at the end of this happy hour that hasn't happened. All right, so you're in town because you live in Vegas. You're in town for the Night Court tribute to Harry Anderson, who, god damn, like, I gotta say, like, I've had, Amy Yazbek was on my show, and John Ritter was on I've Got a Secret, and when these, not just Hollywood legends, but really incredibly nice, kind Hollywood legends die, unexpectedly young, it is traumatic. And when they say, oh, you were like a family in Night Court, you know, you were, weren't you? I mean,
well, yeah, and I was, well, you know, the long-lost cousin. I came in fact, after the first two bailiffs passed away, so.
Wait, Travis told me the story?
Yeah.
Okay, about, just tell it.
Well, no, they had, I'm blanking on their names right now.
Selma Diamond and Flo Hallett.
But they,
Hallett.
They both died of lung cancer.
Yeah.
Well, the first one, Selma was the first?
Selma died. Selma did the first year and a half. Night Court was picked up at mid-season.
Yeah.
And so she did the first year and a half. Then Flo replaced her and died on hiatus.
But both of them were for lung cancer.
From smoking.
Both of them were 64.
Yeah. So they had to go against the grain when they hired a new bailiff.
And they were like, we need someone younger that does not smoke.
And half their age. And I did smoke. And I quit. Yeah.
You used to smoke on stage. I loved it. I mean, not just your whole persona. And I was thinking about how the whole, because I didn't know, like, I dated guys too when I was younger, and a lot of my earlier material too was about guys because I dated guys. But I remember you, what was your great joke about, you know, you're like, they say, you know, puff, you know, they say that women like to look at a man's eyes. I'm like, need that. I have eyes. Oh my god, that was the most elegant dick joke ever, because then it took the audience a second to go, oh, she's talking about she doesn't have a dick, she has eyes.
Yeah, what does she not have that he has?
But I mean, but that, you know, I assume that part at that point was authentic for you, that you dated guys when you were younger. And
right,
yeah,
I did. Married. I got married when I was 18.
For how long?
Until I was 19.
Figure that out.
So when did you realize you were gay?
Not until I moved to Los Angeles.
In
1976, and maybe 1977 I met her.
Oh.
Yeah, her.
Is there her now?
No, there's no her now. I don't know where the old lady gay bars are. So
me neither. There's no her now. Yeah. There was a her.
Yeah, I'm looking for her.
Oh, me too. All right. Let's go cruising together.
Hey.
Hey, let's be each other's wingman. Girl, something.
I am the worst butch in the world. I am. I'm not. I don't know.
I only like the really pretty lesbian lipstick one. It's horrible.
No, I'm.
Okay,
I'm,
that's
I'm
why
a lipstick.
I always get the straight ones. It's
I don't know.
Fine.
You know, stud this. I'm a femme stud. I'm a fud.
What does that mean? What are you looking for?
I like femme women.
Oh, me too. Oh,
but
my
I
God.
Like
we're going to be competing.
Yeah, I like femme women, though, who can, like, drive a truck. You know, it's kind of weird.
No, I get it. It's hot.
I assume you have an Emmy. Do you not? You probably should.
No, I don't.
All right, because we're going to be competing for the
femmes,
anything. And then she's going to be like, I'm Marcia Warfield. I have a fucking Emmy for it. And I'll be like, I work in my basement.
Oh, I thought you were going to say you were competing for the Femmies.
Yes, we are competing for the Femmies.
I know, I just created a new award show.
Right, yeah. The Femmies.
Yeah. It's a new award show.
Hey, that would be cool. Let's start that. So the lesbian award show.
The Femmies.
Ellen wins every freaking year.
All right, so wait, you're out here for Harry Anderson's... I'm so sorry. What did he die of?
I don't know.
He's not very old.
No, he wasn't. Harry and I were the two youngest castmates.
Yeah.
So for him to be gone is... it hit me harder than I knew. I mean, I meant to just talk about it on a Facebook Live.
I know. You said, oh, no.
And I ended up in tears, like, right away. I had no clue that was going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah, you were like, oh, rest in peace, Harry the Hat. You were my friend. Yeah.
That's my favorite. One of my favorite characters in TV history was Harry the Hat. I knew him as Harry the Hat before I met him, and I thought that was the greatest lovable rogue character ever. I mean, he was just, I look forward to seeing him on Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah.
He died of a stroke.
Yeah. Okay. Well, anyway, thanks for bringing us down, Travis.
You asked.
That's okay.
He died of not living
producing
anymore.
Is just buzz killing. That's all it is. You're from Chicago, which I live. I lived in Chicago.
I've lived in Chicago, South Side.
Yeah.
There's two different accents, you know. Chicago. That's
Pulaski. I lived up
North
Pulaski.
North Side.
Because I'm half
like
Polish.
Chicago. Chicago.
Yeah, I get it. we've often noticed that Oak Park has no parking, which is weird. But yeah, no, I lived in Chicago for only for a year and a half. I did morning drive on WCKG, everybody, and I lived off Pulaski. But you are a proud Chicago native.
Yeah, I was just there in February. I brought the blizzard to town. They hadn't had a blizzard all winter. The week I was there, it snowed and stopped traffic. It was just awful. So, I don't think they're going to ask me back.
Siblings, what's your whole deal with Chicago? I mean, because, your mom has passed, I take it?
Yes.
Yeah. My mom's 95, still with us.
My mom died early. She was 56.
Oh.
Wow.
Wow, breast how cancer. Long ago?
1995.
Okay.
That's I crashed and burned.
So wait, you talked about, you said, when I told my mom I was gay, she said she knew, she'd known all my life. Then she asked me not to come out publicly while she was alive. I agreed, even though her request and her admission was hurtful in ways I couldn't put my finger on. And then probably haven't completely worked through now, but everybody who knew me knew I was gay. People I didn't tell knew anyway, tacitly agreed to pretend that the unacknowledged had been acknowledged and accepted, like I'm sure is true for millions of other people,
right?
In the glass door for closeted
people. Closet with the glass door. We're in the closet with the glass door. Yeah, that cat's been out of that invisible bag.
You said I never tried to hide who I was, so it was an open secret. But it wasn't a secret. It was an uncomfortably kept promise to my mom. It was not the only reason I didn't come out swinging when she passed. The fear of the judgment of strangers and their holier-than-thou shoulds was at least as big a burden to bear. But the shoulds and the should don't matter. Nobody should have to hide their sexuality. No parent should ask their child to. There should be no shame in being gay. And how fantastic that we're taping this on June 1st, the beginning of Gay Pride Month.
Yay!
Right? So what...
You're here a week early, by the way. You could find a lesbian next week at Gay Pride here in L.A.
Yeah, well, maybe I can get some stragglers.
Well, some early arrivals.
But so when your mom passed, that's what you're saying. Like, I didn't feel like, I got to come out right away. I mean, because we all have a different time frame. And if we all judge each other, no one will ever fucking come out anymore.
Well,
if you feel
we still have a don't ask, don't tell mentality. We still live in a society that says it's okay, but then as soon as you say something, people go, well, why do you have to mention it? Why do you have to like, they don't announce their heterosexuality every day, why do you have to say anything?
Because you assume things about me.
But I talked to Arsenio Hall about this, about, particularly in the black community, and you talked about Patti LaBelle saying Luther Vandross was gay in the black community's tried and true embrace of don't ask, don't tell. You said, I ain't mad at Patti LaBelle. I'm mad at the people who are. She said Vandross didn't come out in deference to his mother,
right,
and his female fans. And then some celebrities like Wendy Williams and others criticized, Patti because she outed him. You said her words were obviously tempered with love and obvious affection for her best friend. She said being closeted was hard for him. And you said the military doesn't have shit on us when it comes to don't ask, don't tell. We know, but we act like we don't know. And you were talking about specifically the black community.
Yeah, but it's the black community is a microcosm in a lot of ways in this kind of story. It's bigger than us, but especially in the black community. We it's in some ways very conservative with the Christian
church
thing. Then people are conflicted. We all have family members. We all, and then people just feel more comfortable with their, quiet lies.
Well, yeah.
It's just,
But don't you think?
Aunt Theodosia just has a lot of lady friends. We have a lot of play aunties.
But don't you feel like, Marsha, I've been thinking this more and more lately, that Christians got to take their fucking religion back before we can take this country back, because they polled like evangelicals and they are the people least likely to believe in letting refugees in. And you're like, that is the most antithetical to what Jesus actually said.
Well, I used to be an avowed Christian woman, and then I read the Bible and went... that's enough of that. And so I don't do that anymore, and I don't understand people who cherry pick. You know, take any book.
Right.
You could take, you know, Live and Let Die or whatever and pick out a line here and there and come up with some really deep, you know, meaningful stuff. But it wouldn't have anything to do with the whole book. When you read the whole book, all those different little passages you'd like to quote have a whole different meaning, and maybe you need to just start at the beginning and take it all the way through and see how you feel about it.
I love what, you know, there's a lot of these great stories, and you just tweet about all of them. U.S. lost track of 1,500 immigrant children, but says it's not legally responsible. You just tweeted, what kind of people think this is okay?
Did you read the responses? Those are great people.
Yeah.
They told us who has those kind
I
of
I stay out of the comments section. That's avoid the comments section at all costs.
Roseanne Barr attacks cast members on Twitter after following cancellation. You just said, guess the Ambien wore off. you're just like, your stuff is always just so like targeted. This one, these 14 women were brutally attacked for rejecting men. Why aren't we talking about it? You said, I'm all out of patience with the why didn't she just victim-blaming apologist. She didn't just because women who just have been beaten and killed. A young girl recently just told a boy no, so he killed her and shot up the school. Yeah, this is right that there are people actually going, why didn't she just fuck him? You're like,
or why
really?
Did she wait 20 years? Because 20 years ago, she would have been re-victimized even worse than you're doing now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, 20 years ago, it was not a big deal. 20 years ago, there were no women in charge. You know, they didn't start paying attention to domestic violence until women started being allowed to be on the police force.
Yeah.
And so when they would send guys, they would just tell the guy to go walk around the block and then go home. But when women started going out to these domestic violence calls, they would take the men aside and then talk to the women. And they had a different idea about how these things should be prosecuted. And so they started doing more investigation, and it became a thing. So when you have women in positions, just like when you have a black woman head in ABC, then when somebody says something reprehensible, there are consequences that there might not have been had there not been a woman who was black.
Absolutely, Marsh. Doesn't that give you hope? Doesn't that fucking like make you think, shit, like maybe between what you saw with Cosby, like no one will ever say anything, and he's Bill Cosby, and no one, and there's this whole Me Too movement, and there's this whole, like, I actually do believe in this, that we're going to, like, I think we're going to overcome all this. Don't you? I mean, I feel
I think
like
women are making a difference. I think the ERA being passed in Illinois is more than symbolic.
Yeah.
I think women are making a difference, and all of this is female driven. All of this Harvey Weinstein, the Bill Cosby, it's all female driven. It's because women have now attained positions where their voices can be heard.
They have Marshall Warfield themselves. You were this before this was a thing. I got to say, you were such an inspiration to me and to so many women, to black people, to gay people. Like, I didn't even, and you're right, like, I didn't even know I was gay then. But you were just this fierce, outspoken, funny, profane black woman that was just putting it out there. But I mean, in the 70s, right? I mean, back then,
it was the Elaine Boozler.
Yes.
And I
my
were
other hero.
Pretty much the only ones, female stand-up monologists.
Mm-hmm.
Grabbed the mic and just took it and did our thing.
She's
and
done this
so
happy hour.
Everybody else said, you know, you got balls. So that was the standard. And I'm like, no, I got eggs and my eggs and tits. Are, you know, I'll
but
put
no,
my
I
eggs
didn't,
and tits
I didn't know
up
you
against
were
your balls any day. Well, no, not really, but you know what I mean.
I mean, I follow you on Twitter. You're just like, when Trump said at a Nashville rally, Trump asked attendees to raise their hands, asked if they're infiltrating our campaign. You tweeted, we have a mental health crisis in this country. When, you know, Don Lemon said, this is a much, much bigger than Roseanne's tweet. This is about the normalization of racism across this country. You said, when has racism not been normal in this country? You further tweeted, even if we got rid of all the racists, We still have work to do to eliminate racism because they put self-perpetuating systems in place to protect it generations ago. And most people don't see anything wrong with that. If you're comfortable in your little enclave with its people who look like you, you're one of those people. And that's what we need to hear right now. How, you know, because everyone's like, oh, it's Obama. I thought we were post-racial. And you're like, no. You know, we have to scare them back into their fucking Haiti holes, these racists. We have to. This is why ABC's is a great thing to go, no, you know what? That's not okay, Roseanne.
No, I talk about how in the North, which is every place that's not the South, and the South is every place that's not a city, they didn't have Jim Crow, but they had a kind of gentler kind of thing. It was more like James Crow, the North, Jim Crow's northern cousin.
Yeah.
So they were different. The only difference was they didn't put up signs. You know, you just had to know that you weren't allowed to do things.
Yeah.
And so it's the point is to try to get people to understand that it's not just them. It's everybody. It's all of us.
Yeah.
You know, and I have a problem with pointing out racists. Let's point out racism, because pointing out racism, you could just go around the room. We can go around this room. We can go around any room. You're going to find racists because we are all taught that.
I was told in New York by a black man that I'm a racist because I have only white dogs.
See,
so I understand.
But you have dogs. That's racist.
I understand.
No, I'm just kidding.
You
but
retweeted
dogs were weaponized against
black people. This is why we...
So,
exactly. But we have to unite... Now, before these midterms, you tweeted there was an inside the pro-Trump effort to keep black voters from the polls. Breitbart staffer recruited Sanders activist Bruce Carter to get African Americans to support the Republican or stay home. And you tweeted how many Bernie supporters got recruited to fluff for Trump. And if we don't get this now with what is happening with this virulent, vicious racist in the White House...
But
when will we ever get it?
It's a tool. It's a tool, and it was a tool that was used here again to weaponize. Hillary Clinton should be president.
She is,
like,
technically.
Don't like, you know, care, don't care. She was the only adult in the room, and she just no reason why she shouldn't be president. And it's not, like I said, about loving, because that's where people go, well, you must love her. I don't love any president. I don't give a shit about
the
president. But it's a job. That's, you hire a guy or a girl. You don't fall in. It's not a popularity contest. And so she should be. Why is she not? Because she's a woman.
Yeah.
That's the only reason. Had she not been a woman, she'd be president.
Yeah, absolutely. Marsha Warfield, I feel like, Travis, I've controlled myself to the degree that I can for my...
I appreciate it.
Of Marsha Warfield.
I appreciate it. Our advertisers appreciate it.
If you are a comedian of any age or any person, you would understand that Marsha Warfield was and is this fierce voice for all of this shit before it happened, before with Me Tooism, with the racism that's happening in America, all of it. And you inspired just a generation, and you still are.
Well, now I'm a rookie. I'm just like 2.5-3 years out of retirement. I didn't do stand up for over.
No, you have to now. Now you're the resistance man. Yeah. Now it is required of you.
I'm just learning. I'm just now coming into the confidence.
Go to MarshaWarfield.com
and being able to go on stage and take these topics. Everything from Jim Crow to being gay to
retired.
Whatever.
No,
and
listen.
Be able to take them on and crack.
America needs you. Get whatever. The fuck out there. Listen, you have to understand why we all knew from the day she first hit the stage and at the Comedy Store, we all saw her and it revered her. You got to go to MarshaWarfield.com, see why she is one of the original resistance warriors, and I'm just so honored to have you here, and to please go support her. MarshaWarfield.com, go see her live. You will see what we're all talking about.
Thank you. That's so sweet. I mean, I'm sitting here wondering, who the hell is she talking about?
I'm talking about you.
Who is she talking about?
Love you, Marsha Warfield. Thank you. An honor. A pleasure. Thank you.